This week, the Obama administration said it wants to overhaul the country's education system, and it's looking to redesign the No Child Left Behind law. That legislation, introduced under former President George W. Bush, has set achievement standards for nearly a decade. I'm joined now by Arnie Duncan, the U.S. Secretary of Education. Secretary Duncan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
You've said that the No Child Left Behind law, as it exists now, does too little to reward progress. Explain what you meant by that.
Well, there are a couple of things. Let me first start with what I will always give the previous administration credit for, and that's shining a spotlight on the achievement gap and really disaggregating data. But having said that, there are a couple of things as we think about what needs to be fixed. There are a couple of themes that are really important to us. First is we want to have high standards for everyone. We've talked a lot about college-ready, career-ready, internationally benchmarked standards. Under NCLB, many states literally dummy down standards due to political pressure, and that's bad for children, it's bad for families, and it's bad for the economy. And so we've talked about having a high bar, high standards. Secondly, we want to reward excellence. Under NCLB, there are many, many ways to fail. And so we want to shine a spotlight where we're seeing great work, where we're seeing growth, where we're seeing progress. We want to learn from it. We want to replicate it, and we want to reward it. And then third, we talked about that high bar, high standards, and we want to have that for the country, but at the same time be much more flexible at how states and districts and individual schools hit that higher bar. I think NCLB was very loose on the goal, but very tight, very prescriptive on how you get there. We want to literally flip that on its head.
Where do you see this moving on the congressional agenda? Because Capitol Hill, there's already a pretty packed schedule there.
Well, there's tremendous bipartisan support for fixing NCLB, and we've been working very hard with the House and Senate leaders from both Democrats and Republicans. This is the one issue that we think everyone, not just political leaders, but the entire country can rally behind, regardless of politics or ideology. As you know, the president's budget put very significant new resources, $3.5 billion in new money for education, which is a huge investment, and an additional $1 billion if Congress does reauthorize the Elementary and Secondary Act. So the president's put a very significant financial incentive on the table for us to continue to work together.
Now, the No Child Left Behind law also has reading and math proficiency goals that they want met nationwide by the year 2014. Are you considering eliminating that deadline?
No. What we want to do is actually raise the bar. And so it's not about a deadline. It's about having a high bar that's meaningful. And again, that bar, I would argue, in many states is unacceptably low.
So that 2014 year would still be in place under your plan?
Well, we can figure out the time frame. To me, the first question is not what your time frame is, but what your goal is. There are lots of different ideas about time frames, and we're open to those discussions. But my bottom line here is that we have to have a much higher bar, true college-ready, career-ready standards.
I want you to talk a little bit about the Obama administration's competitive grant program. It's called Race to the Top, and it was actually introduced in the previous stimulus program. It's a competitive grant system.
What we fundamentally think is that we have to continue to find ways to reward excellence. And historically, as we're pushing for dramatically better results for children, we're looking in the mirror every single day and trying to be very honest and self-critical about what this department has done to help or to hurt progress historically. And I would argue, quite frankly, that this department has been part of the problem. We've been this big compliance-driven bureaucracy. I've said repeatedly that the best ideas are never going to come from me or from Washington. They're always going to come from great educators at the local level.
At the same time, it rewards school systems, it rewards states who participate in some of the policies that you've talked about and suggested, increasing numbers of charter schools or tying teacher pay to student performance. And I'm wondering what kind of response you're getting from people who are still very critical of some of these policies.
Well, there's actually been an extraordinary outpouring of support for this. There are 48 states today, 48 governors, 48 state school chiefs that are working together on higher standards. You saw 40 states plus the District of Columbia come in and apply in the first round of Race to the Top for funding. You've seen a number of states eliminate legal barriers barring the tying together teacher evaluation with student performance. And you've seen just remarkable progress in this first year before we spent a dime, before the first round of funding has gone out.
I also want to ask you about measuring student performance, since we're talking about the changing of standards. Now, standardized testing is one metric, but a lot of educators complain that they were forced to teach to a test, and I want to get your definition of the best way to measure student performance.
Well, there's no one simple way, and I think we have to be really thoughtful around this. One of the major complaints I've heard was a real concern about the narrowing of the curriculum under NCLB, and I heard that from children, I heard that from parents, I heard that from students, and we're looking to make sure students have a well-rounded education from the earliest of ages. That's hugely important to us. But ultimately, we want to look at growth and gain. We want to look at high school graduation rates. Today, as many as 60% of our nation's incoming freshmen to college have to take remedial classes. They're really not ready, and that's due to the dumbing down of standards across the country that we've unfortunately seen.
Arnie Duncan is the U.S. Secretary of Education. Secretary Duncan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
As we reported yesterday, the American Psychiatric Association has proposed eliminating the diagnosis of Asperger's disorder. Children with this diagnosis are often highly intelligent, but they can have social problems that make it hard to thrive in school. The new definition would place kids within an expanded definition of autism. And these words matter. They matter a lot when it's a label you're putting on your kid. The change could affect families trying to get special education services in the public schools, as NPR's Larry Abramson reports.
Parents of children with autism turn to the federal law that guarantees a free public education for students with disabilities. Kids with autism clearly qualify. For kids with Asperger's, it's been much less clear, especially in California. Melinda Bird, senior counsel with the advocacy group Disability Rights California, says the current guidelines used by psychiatrists present parents with a confusing set of symptoms.
And so parents in school districts spend a necessary time arguing about whether a child meets every one of these nuanced criteria.
Bird says California school districts regularly question whether kids with Asperger's disorder need special ed services because they are often very verbal and very sharp. The new proposed guidelines could ease that confusion by eliminating Asperger's, as well as the unfortunately named pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. That change may make it easier to get services and could speed up what has become a lengthy process. Melinda Bird says that's good for both parents and school districts.
Who will no longer have to try and slice and dice a child up into these different eligibility categories, and everyone will be able to get on about the business of educating children in need.
But special education is seldom that simple. Many attorneys say getting kids recognized as eligible for services is not their biggest challenge. It's getting the services that families actually want, whether it's tutoring or placement in a special school. Steven Greenberg, a special ed attorney in Northern California, says with or without the Asperger's category, schools draw a line in the sand.
Schools often balk at private placements, at having to pay for a placement outside of public school.
Because private placements can cost districts tens of thousands of dollars a year per student. Greenberg says the issue boils down to whether parents in an individual case are happy with what schools offer.
What do you do with that diagnosis and the eligibility? Does the child stay in the public school? Should they be disciplined as other students who do not have the disorder?
An important question, since disabled students have protections against being expelled when they act out. Educators who work with these students say they're concerned about the end of Asperger's for another reason. They feel they're losing a valuable tool which signaled what these kids need. Danya Jekyll runs the Asperger's Association of New England.
It sort of lets the teachers know, the professionals know, that there are a particular set of supports that are needed for these children.
Like other professionals, many educators say they've become accustomed to the Asperger's label. They're concerned the new category could just complicate things for kids who already face a lot of challenges. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Washington.